Good morning. See a couple of you this morning that I didn't get to say good morning to, so I'll say good morning to you now. This morning we're going to be in Genesis chapter 39. And, we're used to hearing Christmas messages at this time of year, and while we may not get the traditional Christmas messages this year as we continue to work through the Gospel Project, one of the things that that I want to show you is that all of the Scriptures, while you can't pick up all of the Scriptures and immediately see Jesus and say, this is just about Jesus, all of Scriptures are pointing us to Jesus. Whether it's the Old Testament Scriptures or the New Testament Scriptures, the Old Testament pointing us forward towards the Messiah and the cross, or whether it's the New Testament telling us about His life or pointing us back to the cross and ultimately pointing us from the cross to the new heaven and the new earth in the kingdom of God. And so, while there won't be traditional Christmas messages until the 23rd, we still will see Christ in it all. Charles Dickens, in his novel, A Tale of Two Cities, said, well, actually, he opened the whole book with this sentence. He says, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom, it was the age of foolishness. It was the time of belief, it was the time of incredulity. It was the season of light, it was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope, it was the winter of despair. We had everything before us and we had nothing before us. We were all going direct to heaven, we were all going direct the other way. And my wife would look at that and tell me that I put too many commas in that if I wrote it. But that was one, actually that wasn't even the whole sentence. He goes on from there. But as we come to this season of Christmas, one of the things that I know is that we're not facing a revolution like the French were at the time that Dickens wrote the book. But it's a season that we celebrate that seems to magnify for us the truth that it is the best of times and it is the worst of times. You know, I don't know where Christmas finds you. We all have Christmas find us in different places and different years find us in different situations. You may be wondering how you're going to buy Christmas presents for the ones you love, or you may be wondering how many presents would be too many. Maybe trying to figure out how to get along with someone, how to fit multiple family celebrations into a couple of days, or simply glad to have the whole family together to celebrate. I've been through some of each of those Christmases as I've celebrated as an adult, and it can leave one wondering at times, is this the best of times, or is this the worst of times? And the truth is, it can change. It can change in the matter of a few minutes. I think that's probably how Joseph felt several times in his life as he was experiencing some of the highest emotional highs that anyone could experience. And the next minute he's experiencing the emotional lows that none of us want to traverse. And the reverse comes in a few words. The reverse comes in a look, comes in a glance, it comes in a moment. And while you and I may never experience the same dramatic shifts that Joseph did, I think that we can all relate and we can all learn from his situation. And so this morning we're going to look at just a small section of Genesis chapter 39. Though we could look at 39, 40, 41, 42, 43, 44, we would get the same message, the same lessons from the life of Joseph. We're going to start in 39 at verse 7. And Moses writes this. He says, well, actually, I'm going to start in the middle of verse 6. It says, now Joseph was well built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of him and said, come to bed with me. But he refused. With me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns is entrusted to my care. And after several times of doing this, Joseph runs from the house one day where she is, and she catches his cloak. She cries foul to the other servants, and then in verse 17, it says, then she told him, that is Joseph's master, she told him the story, that the Hebrew slave you brought has come to me to make sport of me. But as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. When his master heard the story of his wife, he told him, saying, this is how your slave treated me. He burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him and showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those he held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. For Joseph, he goes from the worst of times, being sold into the household of Potiphar as a slave, to the best of times as the chief servant, and actually almost more than a servant in the household of Potiphar, until Potiphar's wife accuses him of attempting to rape her, and then he goes to the lowest, only to rise back up as he's made the chief prisoner of the prison. You know, I don't know how about you, but you don't often want to leave the prisoners in charge. But Joseph has earned the respect of this warden, and he has raised to the highest of highs within the prison. It was the best of times and it was the worst of times. And when we come to Christmas, and actually when we come to any season of life, we find that like Joseph, it can go from extremes. And the thing is life is about tests. And the extremes are the tests that we endure. We don't often think about it, but sometimes success is a greater test than trial. The test of success, and we might overlook this as we look at the life of Joseph, but if you look at Joseph's life, there is a lot to be said about how he behaves and things that take place as Joseph is successful. You see, success becomes for us a test. Because in all truth, we have to ask ourselves the question, whose success is it? You see, there are two choices that we can make in life when we become successful. We can look at ourselves and we can say that we have worked hard and we have put a lot of effort into what we're doing, and we have studied and we have observed and we have worked and we have put in the time and we have become successful. And Joseph could have looked at it that way. And maybe at times he did. Because, yes, we have to work hard. We have to put the effort into it. We have to study. We have to exercise. We have to practice. We have to keep current. We have to put some effort into success. But for Joseph, Moses tells us that it wasn't his success. It says that he was successful because the Lord was with Joseph in everything he did and gave him success in it. We can look at our successes and we can claim the responsibility for our successes, or we can look at the situation and we can say, this is what God is doing in me and through me, and I am successful because of God. Because in truth, if it wasn't for the way that God created us, if it wasn't for the gifts, it wasn't for the talents, the abilities that God created within us, if it wasn't for the fact that you were born when and where you were born, if it wasn't for the fact that you had the opportunities that you've had, where would you be? Where would Joseph have been if he would have continued to live in Canaan with his father and his brothers? He would have continued to be a spoiled, rotten brat. But as he was sold into slavery and he met the first of the lows, he was being prepared for the successes. And it is God's success. As we look at Joseph, it is God's success. And you have to see the theological thread that is running through these things. Because you have to go back to the promise that God made to Abraham to see the importance of the success and to see part of why we have to say that the success that was given to Joseph is not his own. Because you go back and you look at the promise made to Abraham, and the promise that God made to Abraham was this, that through your seed all of the nations will be blessed. Those who bless you will be blessed, and those who curse you will be cursed. And as Joseph is doing well and being blessed in the household of Potiphar, what happens? Potiphar is blessed. He's successful. Things begin to go well for Potiphar. Not because of Joseph, but because of the promise that God had made to Abraham and the promise that God was working out through Joseph. You see, Joseph is successful not just because of Joseph. It might have been in part because Joseph was a good worker. It might have been in part because Joseph was honest. It might have been in part because Joseph was a good manager, but Joseph was being blessed because God's hand was upon him. And if we're successful, we have to be honest and say that at least most of our success is not based upon you and it's not based upon me. It's based upon who God is and who He wants us to be. And so we have to answer the question, whose success is it? But then we have to ask the next question that we see in the life of Joseph in this little section, and that is, what does success earn us? What does success earn us? You see, we have to be careful because society tells us something greatly different than what God tells us. Society tells us something that is many times opposed to what God, not just greatly different, but it is opposed to what God tells us about success and what success should bring us. We would look at the story of Joseph and we would say, Joseph is faithful to God. But you know, if Hollywood were writing this story of Joseph, things would look a lot different. You see, Joseph wouldn't have run away from his master's wife. He simply would have said, this is what I deserve. Look at all of the good things that I have done for my master. Look at all of the privileges and the Look at all of the benefits that have come upon him because I am part of his household. And they would have written it as the real housewives of Egypt. And they would have played off Joseph as this poor, lonely guy who was just getting what he deserved. He'd earned this right to be in the arms of this woman. And after all, wasn't she his master too? Didn't she have the right to tell him this is what he needed to be doing? And we could look at it and we could justify the situation. And Joseph could have easily said, I deserve this. Because success says this is what you've earned. And success can make us think that we deserve whatever we want. I've been successful, so I deserve, and you fill in the blank. And it may start simple. I was successful at school, so I got an ice cream cone. And then we grow up a little bit and I was successful at school and so I deserve a new car. And then we grow up a little bit more and we say, I was successful at school and so I deserve a huge house. And then we grow up a little bit more and we get successful at work and we say, I deserve an even bigger house with even more nice furniture and a bigger car and more ice cream. And we think that we deserve whatever we want, and while there's no problem with having those things, they often become for us the temptation and the test of success. When we think that we deserve whatever we want without realizing that we don't deserve as much as we take. And Joseph is in that situation. He is being faced with the temptation of success. You see, Joseph wouldn't have been in this position if he'd have just been an average servant. If he'd have been an average servant, he'd have still been out in the fields of Potiphar or out in the outside workings of Potiphar. But he was a good enough servant that he moved indoors. And he continued to be a faithful and a good servant indoors. And so Pharaoh or Potiphar got to the point where he didn't even worry about what Joseph was doing. And Joseph was in the house by himself. No supervision over Joseph because he was successful. And because of his success, he was being tested. You see, there are a lot of people who think that that they get whatever they want and they can do whatever they want. And as I was working through the story of Joseph, a couple of them just came to mind real quick. I got to thinking about Richard Nixon and his cronies. You know, I don't know who you would vote for, and I really don't care most of the time. But whichever side of the ballot you might find yourself, you have to admit that Richard Nixon started to think he was above everybody else and he could have whatever he wanted. And so he and his cronies started acting illegally to get what they believed belonged to them. Or maybe you're like me, I like baseball. You know the name Pete Rose? Pete Rose, a great baseball player. Called him Mr. Hustle because he was always on the move. Great hitter, great runner, great player. Then he moved from playing to being a manager, and he wasn't a bad manager either, but he thought he was above the rules, and he thought because he was successful, he deserved to do whatever Pete Rose wanted. And he started betting on baseball. You see, he thought success earned him the right to take whatever he wanted. Richard Nixon thought that success meant he could have whatever he wanted. And unfortunately for us, too often success is the test. How will you deal with success? And often, too often, we think that success guarantees us more than what we deserve, more than what God promises, or in times and ways that God doesn't agree with. The other side of the story, if there is the test of success, it is the best of times, and when you're successful, you have the tests that come along with success. But there's also the test of suffering. The test of suffering, the tests that none of us want to deal with. Most of us would say, give me success. I will deal with success. And I will deal with those tests, please. And in fact, in our modern culture, unfortunately, too much of the church pushes the test of success too far. Give enough money and God will bless you. Pray the right prayers and God will protect you. Do the right things at church and God will bless you. And we push for success. But what about the test? What about the test of suffering? The tests that we often don't want to face. The test of suffering, first of all, asks us or forces us to ask the question, how will we deal with it? How will we deal with the test of suffering? Joseph was in Potiphar's household as a slave. And I tell you, I know that is, for him, the test of suffering. To go from daddy's favorite and daddy's protected and daddy's privileged, spoiled, rotten brat to somebody else's servant and somebody else's slave, that's suffering. You go to a foreign land where they speak a foreign language and have foreign customs, and you are being forced to learn all of that while you're also forced to being forced to learn how to act not as a master but as a servant. And Joseph is here, and Joseph could have done a lot of things. And we're not given a lot of the details of Joseph's life. We're not told how long it took him to become successful in the house of Potiphar. We're told that he was in prison for at least 2 years. We're told that the famine was 7 years long, or the great harvests were 7 years long. That's nine. And we're told that it was 2 years after that before his dad came down to Egypt. And that makes 11. But we're also told that it was 22 years between the time when Joseph left Canaan as a slave until his father came to Canaan, or to Egypt. So we still have 11 years, and we don't know how much of those 11 years is spent in Joseph working his way up the ladder in Potiphar's house. We don't know how much of that time is spent working his way up the ladder in the house of the guard of the prison before the dreams of the cupbearer and the baker come before Joseph. Somewhere in that period, Joseph does some things right. But we know that Joseph could have done a lot of other things. Joseph could have spent all of the rest of his life pouting. You know, and unfortunately, too often when we face the trials or the tests of suffering, when we face the trials of life, the first place we go is to pouting. And I suppose there's something natural about that. And it's okay to be despondent for a period. It's okay to ask some questions. It's okay to try to figure out why things are happening the way they're doing. But Joseph could have remained in that state where he just continued for the rest of his life to pout about how bad things were and how everything was against him. And, you know, I've met some people like that. And they're not fun to be around. And they never seem to enjoy the great things that they have. Because when the suffering comes, they give in to the mentality that says, everything is against me and I might as well not try. You can call it pouting. You can call it pardon me. You can call it the victim mentality. You can call it a lot of different things. And that's where Joseph could have found himself, but Joseph chose rather to trust God. I don't know if Joseph understood what God was doing. Probably not. But Joseph could have turned away from God, but rather Joseph continued to turn to God. He continued to look to God as the faithful one. Joseph could have stolen and Joseph could have cheated his way to the top. Joseph probably could have tried to run away. But Joseph remained faithful. And he turned towards God. He kept looking at the right thing. And the question is how can we remain faithful? And Moses isn't all that interested in telling us a list of steps and telling us this is how you do this. Rather, he's interested in showing us that it can be done. Because he's made the same point several times up to this point in Genesis, as he shows us faithful men and women. And the first thing, if we're going to remain faithful to God, we have to remember that God is faithful to us. That God is with us. He showed it in the story of Noah, because God closed the door of the ark and God remembered Noah and then it stopped raining and God remembered Noah and the waters abated. God remembered Abraham after 25 years and brought the promised son. God remembered Isaac. God remembered Jacob as he left the promised land and was with him and he brought him safely back. And God was with Joseph, and part of remaining faithful to God is remembering that God is with us no matter what we're going through. That unless we turn away from Him and abandon Him, God is with us. And that we have never gone through anything that He is not greater than. See, it doesn't matter what we face. God is greater than that. And God understands. That's the great thing about Jesus becoming a man and living among us. Scripture says that He was tempted in every way that we are, yet without sin. Jesus endured the pain and the heartache of life. And He endured things that we will never endure as He suffered at the hands of the Roman lictors, as He faced the abuse of the Roman soldiers, as He faced the ridicule and the mocking of the same. as he carried a wooden beam down the crowded streets of Jerusalem, as he hung on a cross. You see, God has suffered more than we can ever imagine in Jesus Christ. So we can remember, we can be faithful by remembering that God is with us. Whatever we're going through, God is with us. We also need to remember that we are working for God. If you work for a great company, if you work for a great boss, it's pretty easy most of the time to go to work. Now, there are days when it's difficult. I'll give you that. But if you work for a good boss, it's easy to go to work, even when things are tough. I used to pull wire for an electrician part-time. And there were days when we did some of the most awful work in the worst conditions. It'd be 20 below out, and the wind chill would be at 40 below, and you might have to go sit in a bucket truck in the middle of the Iowa plains with nothing to stop the wind because somebody needed it fixed. And then 6 months later, you could be on a day when it was 100 degrees outside and the humidity was at 90-some percent, stuck in an attic that barely had enough room for you to fit in. But because the guy I was working for was a great guy, I did it and enjoyed most of it. Didn't always enjoy the stench, didn't always enjoy the conditions, but working for the right person makes all the difference. And when we realize that even when we're going through those tests and those times of suffering, that we're working for God, it makes things a whole lot easier. Because Scripture says that we will be rightly recompensed. We will, the things that we will get because we serve God are so much greater than the things that we get on this earth. And the sufferings and the trials will seem like nothing as we experience the joys of working for God. And I think one of the other things that we can do to remain faithful is keep in mind Paul's view. In Philippians chapter 4, one of those passages that we often quote, but not always correctly, Paul says in 4:12 and 13, he says, "I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in whatever situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all things through Him who strengthens me." You see, Joseph could remain faithful to God because he could trust God. Not because the situation looked good, not because things were always on his side, but because God was there. Paul says, I could go hungry and I can have lots of food, but the secret is learning to be content. To be content with God and what He provides. I can also understand why the writer of Proverbs 30 wrote this. He says, "Two things I asked of you. Do not refuse me before I die. Keep deception and lies from me." And then he says, "Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is my portion, that I might not be full and deny you and say, 'Who is the Lord?' Or I may not be in want and steal and profane the name of my God." You see, the writer of Proverbs, just like the story of Joseph, and just like going back to the words of Dickens, reminds us that it might be the greatest of times, but not everything's perfect. Because if we have too much, we may forget the Lord. The test of success may cause us to look in the mirror and say, "I'm pretty good." But the writer of Proverbs also says that we may be in want and steal and profane the name of God because we tell the world we don't trust Him. And we say, I have to do it all myself. You see, unfortunately, Christmas often magnifies the truth of the situation that we're in this society in which we live. And we, like Joseph, need to learn to face the tests well. And to face either test and succeed is to keep our focus not on me, but on God. And I don't know what you're going through this Christmas season, but like Tracy said, if your focus isn't on Christ, Christmas isn't all that it's supposed to be. And you will never know all of the peace and all of the joy that Christmas is supposed to bring. And unfortunately, even as followers of Christ, if we take our focus off of Christ, the season becomes tarnished, becomes dull, it becomes problematic, it becomes difficult. So let's turn our eyes on Jesus, and let's keep Him at the center of Christmas and of every day of life. And if you don't have a relationship with Jesus, we're going to sing one more song this morning. And I would invite you to come and to begin a conversation about what it means to have a relationship with Jesus and about what it means to be a servant of the King. But if you do know Jesus, focus on Him as we celebrate together this morning. Let's stand as we sing.